Hello and welcome to the Motoring Podcast, episode 4 for Wednesday the 17th of October 2015. I'm Alan.
And I'm Andrew.
And here we are again, the fourth proper episode. It's starting to feel grown up, isn't it?
Oh, get us.
I know. Tell me about it. I think the pair of us have spent our week refreshing iTunes.
Yes, I've become suddenly obsessed with things I never thought that I'd get obsessed with.
It's all those things you say you're not going to do. Must be terrible for your kids whenever they get the school reports. You're checking them against each other.
No, I don't do that. I just say you've all done badly. You've all disappointed me. That's it. There's no favourites here.
Same approach as my parents took. Anyway, meanwhile, back to motoring. Got a couple of things to talk about tonight. We're going to run through some news, and then we're going to have a little bit of a talk, hopefully for the last week, as a major topic on a little bit of the Dieselgate and the Volkswagen stuff. Should we get started with some news?
Okay, why don't you do the first one, because you found that. I hadn't seen
this. I'll do the first one. I found this one. According to Autocar, the boss of Renault Sport, Patrick Retty, I hope that's pronounced correctly, has ruled out hybrids in the near future, saying that the cost of investment is just too great to justify for Renault Sport alone. But he has pointed out how much is being learned from Formula E, amongst other sources. And of course, Renault Sport are a partner with the Prost Formula E team. So that one was on Autocar earlier this week, which I thought was, as a bit of a Formula E fan, I thought that was a pretty interesting one.
But they're not involved in any of the Le Mans type racing, are they?
Renault aren't. No, it's
yeah, it and that seems future. To be where the manufacturers who are focusing on hybrid seem to be doing a lot of their testing and experiments. You can tell I follow motorsport really closely, the way I said the Le Mans type racing. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
There's a reason why we've not talked about Formula One yet, folks. That's it. And we probably won't talk about Formula One. Generally the hybrids and the diesel hybrids and folks. So your Audis and your used to be Peugeot as well and stuff are very much in the LMP race in the Le Mans.
Yeah, LMP, that's it. Yeah.
Le Mans Pro racing. Others are heading towards the pure electric, and what with the Renault-Nissan alliance and their focus on fully electric cars like the, I was going to say the Twizy, but I'm not quite sure if that counts as a car or not. The Zoe, the Fluence, and of course the Leaf. Then it's not a huge surprise to see that that's where Renault and Renault Sport are putting their money and their time to the minute. So that was just a quick one, just there. Next up of the quick ones, Jalopnik. Telling us that Mexican drugs smugglers have found out why you shouldn't replace your passenger airbag module with cocaine after being involved in a crash on the way to the border. The driver's in hospital. The I believe at least one of the passengers was seriously injured, if not killed, because their airbag didn't go off. And instead they found 25 kilos of cocaine hidden in the airbag thing. So, don't smuggle drugs, folks.
Yes, quite.
Yeah. You can tell I had time to spare this week when I was finding all the vital and important stories like that one.
Yeah, quite.
Should we move on to something a bit more serious and probably a bit more relevant to people?
Yes. The convertible Evoque has been revealed by Land Rover. It's in final testing. And it looks like an Evoque without a roof. Mm-hmm. Pretty much from what I can see. Not my cup of tea. I don't. A luxury SUV with no roof doesn't. Mm.
Can I? Sorry, just quickly. Okay. Everyone said, "Well, it can't be the first convertible SUV." I think even I said it wasn't the first convertible SUV because I brought up the appalling the appalling looking Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet, which was sold in the US. But it's Land Rover.
They actually sold that?
Yeah. Oh, did you think that was a Photoshop?
I thought it was just a test, you know, like a concept.
No. When I say sold, I'm probably going a little bit far here. It put into production. Mm-hmm. That was a series production vehicle, mate.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Although I can't... why not? Because near where I live, there is a convertible PT Cruiser.
I've bored people with Twitter on before about the 2 weeks that a mate and I spent. When we booked the driving holiday, you know, down the Pacific Highway of the US, you know, going from San Francisco down to LA and then out to Vegas and finishing up in LA again, and it was going to be great. It was two single guys, brilliant Mustang, you know,
brilliant. Great road trip.
Great road trip. Nice American smushy car. And then we got San Francisco Airport, and all they had as Alamo had as rentals were PT Cruiser convertibles. Worse than that, all they had were metallic pink PT Cruiser convertibles.
Oh,
I'm not even
dear.
Making it up. I wish I was just adding to it and glossing it to make it funny. But
that is fantastic.
2.4 liters of, I think it was, in theory it was 2.4 liter automatic, and I swear it was shocking. Anyway, that's nothing to do with Land Rovers.
No.
So Land Rovers, what did they do to go out and test it? Where would you go to go out and test a convertible Evoque?
Wilmslow. Yes.
It's a good start, but they went for the Crossrail tunnels under London.
Okay.
And if you've not seen the video on the Land Rover website, it is really rather good. But I keep thinking it should be a bit more like the Italian job, and it should go right round and do a sort of barrel roll inside the tunnel.
Yeah, but won't physics sort of take over at that point?
Well, not if they'd hurry up a bit.
Yeah,
just pootling along. I'm going to be honest. I quite like it. I wouldn't own one, but I wouldn't be ashamed of having one on my drive. But I'm a bit weird.
Mm. There was a nice article on Petrol Blog regarding the Evoque, which we'll put in the show notes. You can go along and have a chuckle and read that.
Yeah, well worth 10 minutes of your time having that. Read that.
As ever, Gavin writes good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I like.
Right, the next thing is SMMT, and I could say it this week, has reported that UK new car registrations are at record level for September. Now, I always get really confused by new car registrations. Is that the same as cars that have been sold, or is that cars that have just been registered but then maybe sit on a parking lot for a little while?
Now, I don't know, but September is, of course, new registration month.
It was new plate, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's new plate month, which is probably one of the reasons that it is quite a significant rise.
And they also say in their article, again, it'll be in the show notes, but they say in their article that good deals were taken advantage of. You know, there was plenty of good deals out there from manufacturers for people to go and buy the 65 plate, so. I mean, it's great news that if for Britain manufacturing and for the car industry in this country that it is going way up now from the doldrums of, I think it was 2009, looking on their graph, there was
it's shocking, 1.8 million.
Yeah, not good times. Mm-hmm. So that's great. I hope it's not a bubble. That's all.
That was 1.8 million rolling year total. So that was in the year up to August 2009, 1.8 million. Whereas now, year up to September, 2.6 something, according to the graph.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that will then feed on to more money being in the places near car factories and all the rest of it, taking advantage, you know, all the feeder and everything else that's connected in with it. And that's only a good thing for the country.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go on too much about it being a bubble and stuff, given I actually got the proposed delivery date for my MX-5 today. So,
December the 21st?
Next month it should be mine.
All right, good.
No, it should be the 29th at the latest, 27th to the 29th of this month.
Of this month? Oh, okay. This month.
So I'll be in next month's figures.
Cool.
Whee! I'm far too happy about that, by the way. It's some more interesting stuff, by the way. Just doing my usual. Everything, basically, there were increases across the board, no matter what type of, what type of fuel you use, because, of course, there was no Dieselgate issues at that point. I can't believe I'm even referring to it as Dieselgate. Go slap myself soundly around the head later. but alternatively fueled vehicles, also another strong month, volumes up 21.7%. I imagine that's on the same month last year rather than a month on month.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, because then it talks about year-to-date growth. Yeah. So, yeah. If it's actually quite an interesting little summary there, and well worth a little look at. But 462,517 cars registered in September. That's a lot.
Yes, that is. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of Volkswagens in the year to date.
In the year to date, yes.
Or the Volkswagen Group. Mm. Mm. No, it's good. It's good.
Yep.
I hope it continues, and I hope it's sustainable.
Yep, that's the aim. Speaking of sustainable cars, speaking of sustainable cars, what's the next one then, Andrew?
You may have seen something about this on Twitter today, or since we recorded, the new M4 GTS. Now, I didn't realise people needed a quicker M4. But obviously people do need a quicker M4.
So just how quick?
Right, this one has 500 brake horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. It is limited to 190 mile an hour, and it goes 30 seconds quicker round the ring than the normal M4. That seems quite rapid.
Yes, it does. In a word, yes. Yeah.
You pay for that, though.
Yeah, there are only going to be 700 of them.
Yeah.
Which I guess is part of the appeal, because maybe it's me, maybe it's where I drive. I don't think so. But I see a lot of M4s and M3s. A lot of them.
We've got about three locally, the M4s.
Yeah.
We're not in a particularly urban area or a well-off area, so...
No. Yeah, well, I'm exactly the same, and there's on the little bit, the little kind of set of new build houses where I live. Then there's there is at least one. One M4. So go on, how much is it?
It's only £120,000.
I'll take three.
Yeah, that's. What else could you get for £120,000? Are you in? Well, you've got to be in Ferrari, Lamborghini.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah, that's about. So I think you're hitting
go for an M4 over.
Because it's only 700.
Well, yeah.
I genuinely don't know, because if I was spending that much on a car, I would buy a 911.
Yeah.
Sorry, I would. I would buy. Now, if I remember rightly, it's been a while since I've been playing with the configurator, because I've been quite busy lately. I think for the pre-facelift, the pre-everything a turbo, 991, then I think that whenever I specced up a Carrera 4S Targa with some of the nice stuff, not going silly, then I think it was in that kind of ballpark.
There's a red one keeps coming down our road and visiting someone up the road, Targa, and it looks fantastic.
I do like
in red, and it makes a lovely noise.
It's such a cliche.
I'm not a convertible Targa top type chap, but yo, I would that.
Yeah. Yeah, so would I. I'd be there or a McLaren, but I can't remember where the McLarens start these days because the prices have all changed and the models have all changed names, and I don't want to make a fool of myself.
Yeah. But going back to the M4 GTS, the pictures I've seen in that grey, it looks fantastic.
The wheels are
the sculpting on the body and everything. That looks really proper. Yeah, that's nice. That nice and aggressive. Yeah, the grey is.
Do you think they do it in that ice, that really nice ice blue they do?
I bet it's. Sorry. No, I bet it's one of those that will only come in that.
Yeah, it probably only comes in that grey and orange.
Sort of that matte orange, or matte grey, sorry, that means you've got to take it back to the dealer to get washed or whatever the problem is that you can't. You're obviously not just taking it down using the spray hose at the Shell garage.
No. No, exactly. I bet it probably does only come in that satin grey with the orange. But no, looks great. Looks really nice.
And yes, it's going to go like stink. Clearly, it goes like stink, and it's going to be a brilliant drive.
I've just noticed, sorry, there's one line in the notes here which I hadn't noticed before. 1,510 kilos curb weight.
Only.
Isn't now, if people were extracting the urine out of the fact that it has kind of fabric loops instead of, you know, proper door handles and stuff in the front. But 1.5 tons for really what's quite a big, incredibly powerful car. That's quite light. Because even my MX is coming in at 1,100 or something. I suppose that's four fat blokes more than MX-5, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still light for that anyway. It's still quite light.
I wonder if it's... I wonder what the ride is. Is it spine-shattering and then stiffer than that, or is it... Well, no, let's be honest. It's like any of those GT
cars. It's going to be sorted.
It's not... designed specifically for the road, is it?
Do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if you found it was adjustable and you could have it set up how you wanted. And I'm sure that there's a range on the dampers. If you're paying that much for the car, I'd flipping want adjustable dampers on it.
Images of that Aston Martin that James May took through the south of France.
Nah, that was a proper race car. No. You've not tried my Yaris, have you?
No. I've never actually sat in a Yaris.
Haven't you? One day, my friend, one day.
I know.
I have a weird sense of what a hard ride is. Although I confess that after last night's, there was a kind of late night 100-mile blat up the road from City Airport to mine in the Yaris, and then today it was a case of, I fancy something quieter and more civilized, so I've brought the Veyrcross with me this time. And when that counts as smoother and quieter, you know you're onto something better.
Were you watching £10 notes just pile out the exhaust pipe behind you?
I'm trying not to think about it. Yeah, about the same range, only it costs you twice as much to fill the fuel tank. So I might be hitting 20 to the gallon if I'm lucky. Moving on. Quickly, before we talk about me and fuel consumption of Veyrcrosses, it's never a good topic. One last slightly silly one here is, I don't know if any of you saw, I mostly spotted it on Gizmodo, but it was doing the laps of Twitter earlier on, this drivable cardboard Lexus IS, which I think is a fantastic publicity stunt. Really is. 1,700 sheets of precisely laser-cut cardboard. And to be honest, I was quite surprised it was as few as that. All recreating the slightly pained looks of the Lexus IS in cardboard. I think it looks fantastic. And I would have completely ignored it if it hadn't been for the fact that it does actually have structural wire in it. So you can open and close the doors. You can actually sit in it. And even better than any of that, they fitted it with a small electric motor so you can actually drive it and maneuver it about, which I think is just genius. It's going to be on display at Grand Designs Live. So that'll be at the NEC sometime soonish, I think. It's not very far away. So if you do want to see it, then it will actually be at the NEC. So yeah, really nice. Somebody would probably tell me off for calling it a publicity stunt, but I just think that's really clever and really original. So I thought it was worth a wee mention.
No, it does look good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So on to your favourite topic then, Alan.
My favourite topic. I wouldn't... Volkswagen! Hooray! Yes. Yes, I'm not going to read out what I've put in the show notes here. I'm going to declare this here and now so that Andrew can't back out of it, although he can always crop it out of the audio, I suppose. This is the last week this gets its own section, okay? It's starting to settle now. This is, I promise, guys. Next week, we will talk about anything in this section apart from the Volkswagen recall.
Hopefully. Okay? Hopefully.
No, we will. Honestly, But even then, we'll still keep it down to the couple of minutes in the news section. So, I'm going to let you start first, because I've got some stuff to say, but I'll say it in a minute.
Okay. Well, just quickly, in case people have missed it, VW now has set up specific sites for VW, Audi, Seat, and Skoda, where people can go and check to see if their car is involved in this issue, and that is going. They're going to be the places to get more information. Apart from when the VW group get in touch with the owners directly, these will be in the show notes. So if you do have a diesel engine and you are not sure whether you are involved in this and whether you need to, whether your engine is going to be recalled. Or your car is going to be recalled as well, not just the engine. The whole car comes back.
Yes.
It makes it a bit tricky if you could just take it out on your drive and wheel it across to the garage. so then you
can, used to be able to do that. It was only four bolts on a Beetle. Yeah.
So then you can put your VIN number in and it'll tell you whether you're involved or not. So go to if you weren't aware of that or you haven't checked, they're in the show notes, so try out there.
Point. I noticed some of my friends in the US actually who have Volkswagen TDIs were saying that they've actually started receiving their apology letters from Volkswagen. So I've not seen one of the apology letters, but I believe that actually letters are being sent out in other territories to say we are very, very sorry. We have been very naughty. And all these kind of things. So
lawyers spent hours making sure that that was written just a way, a particular way.
I think that some of their in-house corporate lawyers are going to be very, very busy. Mm. Especially, they're going to be blooming busy. Because, I mean, they're considering everything. I mean, there was an article in Bloomberg earlier in the week. Saying that basically they were considering absolutely everything from just doing the fix, from software fixes to hardware fixes as well, depending on the engine, right the way up to swapping out for a new car as well. They've supposedly, so far, they've not actually been, they've not been ruling out anything on that kind of level, which says quite something. They have said, and this is where I'm going to get off up, they have said that they are going to start performing whatever recall is required in January, and that all the vehicles affected, so that's what, 11 point something million, is it?
Yep.
Will be fixed by the end of 2016. Which is quite an undertaking.
Yes, it is.
It's quite an undertaking. I did a little bit of maths earlier on, you know, instead of doing sensible stuff. And I worked out that in order to fix the 11 million vehicles, in order to fix them, they would within that 365 day period, if they were working nonstop, there would be a VW recall being performed every 2.88 seconds for an entire year to do that. Now, I'm sure it won't be that bad. I'm sure it'll be, you know, it won't be quite as bad because there is a certain amount of wastage, for want of a better term, along the way. So some will have been crashed, others will have been modded, others will have had other bits and pieces done to them, I'm sure, to knock a couple of, well, at least a million or so off that. But there was a big outcry. There were people on Twitter earlier on who were going, "That's terrible. They should be fixing them right away. If I were a Volkswagen owner, I'd want my car fixed right now. Now." And it's getting very, very angry about it. And I looked at those and I thought, nah, you've got 11 million cars to fix, right? That are being driven in a load of different, that are all around the world. Loads of different scenarios, loads of different use cases for them. God, I'm using work speak, I'm afraid, for them. And you want the fix to be right. Because the only thing that could make this worse, believe it or not, there is something that could make this worse, would be if the fix that you rolled out made it worse on the car. Broke something, and then everyone all around the world is going to be going, "Well, it was a perfectly good car before you applied this fix to it." So, you know what? I'm quite glad on behalf of Volkswagen owners that they're not running around and they're not just randomly applying patches that they don't, that they haven't fully tested, and that they don't know what's going to happen, and that they've trained the technicians. I'm hoping this is what I would expect from a project, that they've trained the technicians, they're prepared for it, they've made sure they've got all the support in place as well over the next 6 to 8 weeks, and that they've got all that kind of thing. It's a humongous project, and I don't feel that that's an unreasonable startup time, especially if they're then going down the road of mechanical fixes, where you've got to get, you know, VW have to get their suppliers on board. They've got to kick them into shape. They've got to work out the costings for all of doing all of this stuff and all the legal work we've just come to. And then they've got to actually make sure the right bits get to the right places in the world so that they can be fitted. So I don't feel that that's very long, to be honest, before starting, given all these things in place. From a project point of view and from a you know, impact from an impact point of view, I think that that's actually pretty damn good. The only other thing I think there should be, I'm saying before I get interrupted at some point, is there are only two, kind of really only two ways to fix this. One is you either make the car less powerful or you make the car less economical, because that's the balance in there somewhere. And of course, in order to pass the test, the cars were being less powerful. So I have a funny feeling that they should actually offer Volkswagen owners a choice whenever they come around. They can say, "Well, do you want the power that you've still got, but less economy? Or do you want all the economy, maybe a bit more, but less power?" So I think that there should be two flavors of fix. There should be a power fix and an economy fix. And it should be down to the owner to choose. But yeah, that's it. Right, off the soapbox again. I'm done.
Okay, I disagree with you.
I could tell that was coming. Go on then.
Go on. I'll start with the last bit first. I don't think there should be two. I don't think you should offer people two fixes, because that opens the opportunity for people to sell on a car willingly or shadily, saying, "Oh no, this has got that fix, not the other fix." When effectively, if you go to the car, you're next to them, you look at them, you wouldn't be able to tell which one's the power, which one's the economy.
They would never offer two fixes. I was being slightly silly, but I had time to think yesterday afternoon. Well,
listening to you talk through it all, though, I can see, without, particularly when you mentioned the last bit, what do you want? Do you want power or economy? I can see why they are considering just giving owners a new car, because it could well be cheaper than the litigation for, right, this isn't the car that you sold me, because I bought this car expecting it to be X powerful, it is not that, or X economical, it is not that.
Or both, X powerful and X economical. So even with the two choices.
You have diddled me because you knowingly lied, and therefore it was never going to achieve what I was expecting to buy. Because, of course, everybody who bought these diesel engines was carefully checking the specs for power and economy, not what tax bracket it was in.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, onto the slightly bigger one.
Yeah.
You think it's all right for them to start in January?
Yeah.
I don't. Now, I will explain why. I hear all your arguments, and they are valid points. I would argue, though, that a company the size of VW, because the news broke on the 18th of September, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So they knew about that before then, because they'd spent 12 months stonewalling the US regulators. So they've known about this. Somebody in VW has known about this a long time. We're now on the 7th of October, two and a half weeks later, give or take. What, if you are telling me from the 6th of October, when Matthias Müller decided to tell a German newspaper and not the world's media that's what they were going to do it then in January. What have they been doing for 2.5 weeks?
I put it down to big company.
Big company. Everything else is off our plates. Issue. All the senior staff will have been eating, sleeping, and drinking Dieselgate. And how do we get out of this hole? Those ones are still employed. We're not on suspended. So as that's the case, the second this information came out, or they knew it was going to come out, if they didn't set up a Dieselgate recall team, project team, the senior, whoever would be responsible for that sort of thing to make that decision has failed the company. Because that was always going to happen. Because America had said, you must recall these. So they knew they were recalling America.
Yeah.
So then they knew also that it involved another 10 point whatever million cars across the world. So there's no way that these other countries were going to go, yes, all right, we'll just carry on. Don't worry about it. So there are senior people that should have, and I'm hoping that they did, implement the project team for recall. So they will have planned the process out. They will have known exactly what they needed to do, and then they will be gearing up as you said, the suppliers, the informing the dealers, and all the rest of it. If what they're saying now is, well, actually, we took that 2.5 weeks to come up with a plan of how we think it could happen, but now we're going to talk to the dealers after that. That's, wow. You've not taken this seriously, if that's the case. This we are talking about people are going to lose their jobs who had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, that's true.
Because very, very poor business decisions are being made. And have been made. So if that is the case, you have got to get yourself sorted and fix this now. That means you must have a proper plan in place for how that you're going to fix all this. You're going to have timescales. Maybe they do have this all internally, but they are choosing just not to communicate this to the world at large. And if that is the case, wrong. Such a wrong decision. Right now, VW, you have to be open. You basically might as well have journalists sitting in your meetings, so that they can report that you're all telling these things, because you need to show that you are doing the right thing for the customer as quickly as possible. And saying January is, and forgetting how Jim Holder wrote a interesting piece in Autocar about only talking to the German, to a German newspaper rather than talking to customers of VW.
Mm-hmm.
And how perhaps that wasn't a clever decision. I said, no, I don't think it is a clever decision, actually. Mm-hmm. The videos they were doing a week or so ago where they were saying, these are the problems, we're trying to fix it now, blah, 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 I think that was the right thing to do because that could go out and reach everyone quickly. And they have to do that. They need to manage this news and not let the news manage, the newspapers and the media manage this news. VW have to manage the news and inform the customers first. Because they've already let the customers down. So they know the solution because they know what the problem is. At the minute, it sounds like they're trying to decide which of the solutions is the most economical compared to repairing their reputation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It should not take 3.5 months to get the first car through the door to fix it. From knowing when the problem was. That is why I do not believe that is an acceptable timescale. It is going to take a long time, and you are not going to fix all the cars quickly or anything like that. But to get the first one through the door, January, no. I'd be fuming if I had a car and it was going to change in any way, I'd want it done now. Because
really?
The other thing they've got is I
still don't understand the want it done now. I treat it a little bit like, you know, upgrading my phone.
I'd at least like to know that they are fixing cars now.
Okay.
3.5 months sounds That's like different. They were just stalling for time. Because like I said, they know the solution. They'll have at least enough stuff to whatever solution they're going for.
Do they know the solution though?
Yeah, because they've got the people who did the Dodge job in the first place. So they'll know what the Dodge job is, so then they'll be able to sort the solution.
But that means that then the cars are non-compliant. So surely it has to be compliant and as close to what the client believed they were. Compliant and as close to what the customer believed that they were buying as well. And that's surely the issue.
As well, is we're in conjecture land again, still.
Because
VW are not communicating what the problem exactly is and what the potential solutions are. It's all hearsay. We're all having to speculate.
Yeah.
So we don't know. And again, 2.5 weeks in, they should be able to come out in a press conference and say the problem was X and the solution is Y.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they did that, I think they could buy time to say, and we'll start in January. Because if they could tell people, this is your problem, this is how we're going to fix it, and we will come back to you, and we will start that fix in January when we have enough parts, then that is something. But at the minute, they're just not even telling anyone what the solutions are, what the problem is exactly. It's just there is a problem.
I mean, there seems to be plenty of other stuff leaking out about what the longer-term impacts of this are going to be, of course. There seems to be far more about potential cuts, cuts in R&D spending, which it sounds like that's the last place they should be cutting their spending, and some of these sorts of things.
And goodbye, Bugatti.
Goodbye, Bugatti. Yes, I didn't say that. I thought it just there as I was scrolling through stuff.
I mean, talk about everyone. I presume everybody decided to have a non-uniform day today in Bugatti. Crikey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty grim. I mean, again, I'm looking through the I'm looking through the Autocar site again, and a piece by Hilton Holloway, who's oh, he's not always got the most positive outlook on anything, to be perfectly honest. Does Hilton, much as I enjoy his writing, but yeah, he's saying, you know, basically there is a strong likelihood that things will need to, be spun off and split away. And that kind of news is getting out. How are they going to fix stuff? Not so much.
Yeah, they need to address that. They started well with being open and honest, but it's not gone that way. They've got to keep that going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tailing off quite badly. Anyway.
I think... Well, I've got one other question.
Oh, go on then.
That I don't think anyone's really been asking. Because I was talking to somebody who's got no interest in cars, but they knew about the VW issue.
Like everyone does.
And they were asking, why did it happen?
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, it was such a terrible decision to say, let's put this fix in, this defeat device in. Because, and we're not talking about stupid people either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are engineers, they're senior executives, they are not stupid people. So they would know that will get found out. At some point, either someone will leak it, or it'll not work on a test, or something. That will get found out. So that is a colossally stupid decision to make that would affect the business. That who, you know, would anyone know it would be this bad? It would affect it.
No.
But so why? What was the culture where whoever made that, whichever senior person made that? Because this isn't an engineer in a room on his own. Who's done this?
No.
I've worked in big businesses. You go into big companies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People don't make these sort of decisions on the back of a fag packet in the pub on a Friday lunchtime and say, well, I won't tell anyone, but I'll just do this.
Yeah.
They do not do this. So this has gone through several stages to get to a point where someone senior enough has turned around and gone, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Unless there has been so much pressure been put by those senior people on folk where the only possible way that they can achieve what has been set for them internally is to do something like this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's it. So is it the culture? Yeah. Is it a culture of fear? Is it a culture of don't raise problems? You know, what is the environment within VW, or was the environment? Hopefully it's a was now.
Mm-hmm.
Was the environment within VW that allowed this decision to be made? Because it's all well and good that we're all worried about, and quite rightly so. Let's fix the car. Let's have that so we know exactly where everyone stands and it is registering the correct amount of pollutants and emissions that it is actually doing at all times. But the inside of that company needs to be looked at and gone, if you've made that decision, what other decisions have you been prepared to make? Because if you make a bad decision on one point, you're prepared to make another bad decision.
Yep. That
was such a risky... Because it was going to get caught. It was always going to get caught.
Someone at some point was going to notice. There was. It brings me back. There's an interesting... You know the whole wider impacts of this that we talked about and everybody saying, no, definitely not us.
Mm.
There was a... As I say, far too much time sitting thinking. This week. But there was a story on Todd Merritt's Data Tech News show a little while ago about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and how John Deere, of all companies, was pressing for it to be illegal for people to download and look at the code in the engine management systems of their vehicles. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe the two aren't related. And I, at the time, thought, well, this is a crackdown against chipping, you know, where you've got one, to take a semi-hypothetical example, one BMW diesel engine, which is exactly the same engine, but is sold as three or four different models just by retuning it.
Mm.
And of course, you don't want people going along buying themselves a 116D, hypothetically, and then chipping it all the way up to being a 120D.
Yep.
For significantly less money. And I thought that was where it was coming from. But the more I think about it, the more I read into this, the more I think that this may actually possibly be related. And I have nothing more than my own spidey sense on that one. Let's not pretend that's based in anything other than me.
Well, no, somebody I follow on Twitter brought up that one of the solutions is that all source codes are in the public domain or what do you call it when they're all open source or something like that?
So that
they can be checked. So then people can go through and go, well, hang on, that's a deliberately dodgy piece, or that's, you know, vulnerable security-wise or whatever. No, I'm conflicted by that.
Yes, I'm always conflicted by open source.
One hand, I can see if you use it for good, which is to help protect the consumer or find flaws that can be fixed, yes. But the problem is it's never just used for good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's essentially the theme of a talk I was at not so long ago about open source software. Yeah.
So, but I just don't know the answer to that one. Or I have not come to a conclusion. Whether I know the answer or not is different, but no. I have not come to a conclusion on that.
I don't think any of us can. So there is one little bright point on the horizon, though. If you're Italian and you own a Volkswagen, Fiat offering you €1,500 cash off your new car if you go trade in your Volkswagen Golf for a Fiat 500. So there you go. So just bear that one in mind, Volkswagen owners. If it's that bad, go and buy your next car and buy your next Fiat in Italy and trade in and get that cash incentive because, FCA are fairly, please excuse the term, cashing in on it.
Mm. So, very good. That was the first one I've seen like that. Okay.
Ba-dum.
So hopefully that is the last time that we devote such a large chunk of the show to this.
Yes. Next time we're simply going to say Bugatti is dead, Lamborghini is struggling, and that's it. Then we're going to move on to something more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel so sorry for all the people that are going to be made redundant as a result of this. It's not their fault, it was nothing to do with them. They thought they were in the safe hands of people who were making the right choices, and they weren't. And that's, I mean, I know that's business, and I know that's everywhere, but it's such a shame.
I worry. Times like this, people use techniques like that to clear out other stuff as well that maybe needed a decent excuse to get rid of. So, and it's going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting, but it's not going to be nice.
No, but it does. It does see what swing to see back what to what we were discussing. Well, the question I was asking last week about. Do we see people just becoming, instead of there being the engine section of VW, is there, you know, German Engines Limited suddenly crop up as a result of that, you know, and do these large companies suddenly fracture and we have lots of people who supply multiple companies with specific components? I mean, I know it happens anyway, but I mean, really. That they, you know, they're almost first tier.
Yeah,
they're almost the manufacturers themselves. That's the sort of level I'm talking about now.
It's interesting. I don't know. I don't work with enough car companies to know. Don't really with any to know. But if you get stuff like BMW, for example, most of their four cylinder diesel engines for the entire world are made at Hams Hall near Birmingham, isn't it? They've got basically BMW's big four-cylinder diesel engine plant. Engines are all made in the UK, I think. I haven't checked that one out, guys, so don't give me too much for hammering if I'm wrong. But I'm pretty certain that that's the case. So, you know, I slightly ridiculed you about it last week, but this week it doesn't seem so silly, which is sad.
What, that I might be right?
Well, yeah, that too. Of course, that too.
No, I know what you mean. I was just being narcissistic. Right,
reached the end. That was almost as bad as my Frankfurt taxi ride earlier on this week. It's, yeah. For those of you who wanted a mention of the Frankfurt taxi ride, if you've never been to Germany. Or be to Frankfurt. Try and avoid getting a taxi. Maybe it's because I'm a control freak, but bloomin' heck. 120 miles an hour, sort of 4 feet off the back of the car in front, isn't very good for my control freakery. Knock yourselves out. On you go. You do it yourselves.
I take it that wasn't in a Mercedes W123 either.
It wasn't a W123. No, it was an E-Class, though. It was current generation E-Class, which, by the way, it's a fantastic taxi. So quiet and so flaming fast. But I think that, you know, the roads over there, I think, have a lot to do with it. The road surfacing is... It's like when you come back from France and the first thing you have to drive on is the M20. You remember just how nice it is driving in the
car. Welcome to Britain.
Until the M25, yeah. Anyway.
So, Alan, how can people get in touch if they so desire?
Tuned up. Well, people can quite easily get in touch with us. Certainly, they can get in touch at www.motoringpodcast.com, which is our website. We also have a Twitter account, which is at Motoring Podcast. Can you see there's a theme here? We actually have a YouTube channel, which doesn't have human.
Do we?
Right. Yes, we do. YouTube channel, which is Motoring Podcast. And last but not least, because it keeps popping up in the top corner of our own website, we've actually got a Google Plus page, but I haven't looked at it for months and months and months. So I wouldn't bother with that. But nobody bothered with Google Plus anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And of course, we're on iTunes.
Yes, we are.
iTunes as well. Yes. If you have a quick search for us. How's about getting in touch with you personally, Andrew?
Best place would be on Twitter. I am at Cracked Windscreen. Just search for that if you don't already follow. Feel free to just give me a shout. Ideas, suggestions, where I'm wrong, if you so think. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but you won't be right.
Your thoughts on the British Bake Off?
Yeah. Yeah, no, not for me, thank you. I think it's the best way to put that. So how about getting in touch with you personally then, Alan?
Me, again, Twitter's about the best, to be honest. It's always in my pocket.
In your pocket?
All of Twitter is in my pocket. Well, it feels like it sometimes. And it's at AJP Bradley, B-I-A-D-L-E-Y, at the end there. It's the best way to get in touch with me. You can also get in touch by email. There's motoringpodcast@gmail.com. Two quick iTunes things. Very quick iTunes things. First one, Smooth Traffic. We talked about them last week. Johnny Edge, Robert King, and Ben Pierce. They are now on iTunes as well as on all the other platforms. So I'd strongly recommend subscribing and giving them a listen. I'll be giving them a listen to make sure that they've mutual admiration societies going there. And the last thing about iTunes, guys, it's been fantastic. So far, it really has. I think we were both saying before we started recording that just how pleased we are with the reception we've had.
We were at one point second in automobile behind Gareth Jones on Speed the day after their latest episode came out. And
yeah.
I was blown away by that because obviously you hope that it goes well. But, you know, we're just two chaps having a chat and putting it out, and we're not. As though we're from a magazine or from a TV program or a YouTube channel or anything like that. It's purely from the people we've chatted to on Twitter. And we've put it out there and people have listened, and they've listened sufficiently that we end up second in the charts. Brilliant.
Two episodes in the top 10 at the same time. Yeah. For motoring. Yeah. Yeah, as I think I said on Twitter, it only took British Airways to knock the smile off my face. So chuffed. There is one little bit in there, though, guys. If you've enjoyed it, don't let this stop you saying, giving your thoughts back to us on Twitter, because many of you have been. But please, 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 a rating and a wee comment in there as well. The comments are important because they really do help push us up and not so much up the rankings, but give us better coverage and better broadcast and more publicity than we can speak. It is now part of the algorithm on iTunes to pushing people up. It isn't just the number of listens. It is also in interactions from the community. So please, the nicest, the best thing you could do for us at the minute is a 5-star rating and a short but nice comment would just be awesome.
Yes, please.
Yes. Yes. I think that sums it up for this week, my friend.
I think so.
Cool. So I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And until next week, safe motoring.